have gotten anything done between the hours of 6 and 8 o'clock.
So you're just here killing time?
Just here killing time. Yeah. You know.
Okay, in that case, I'll take
killing
that
time back. With some friends.
Yeah, never mind, man.
You're welcome, but it's advice.
Yeah. Scratch that.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. So we're in Genesis chapter 18. There was a discussion with these three men who showed up at Abraham's door. And we talked a lot about hospitality and Abraham recognizing the visitation. Last week we talked about the fact that God shows up on his time, not on our time, on his calendar, not on our calendar. And so that's what's happening here. They're passing by Abraham's tent. He invites them in, has a conversation with them. You kind of wonder if when they show up, he lifted up his eyes in chapter 18, verse 2, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing in front of him. They came to visit him, but you wonder if they were just passing by. Probably not. There were things that needed to be said. The covenant needed to be solidified, and your wife, and she's gonna have children. And then last week we kind of ended with the note of don't try to hide something from God. Sarah said, "No, I didn't laugh," and we thought it was really a little comical in a way, because the response from who we believe is a pre-incarnate Christ probably says, "No, but you did laugh." That's the ESV translation. "No, but you did laugh." In other words,
or "Yes, you did laugh."
Yes, you did laugh. You really did. You can't deny that. And it's kind of just a matter of fact kind of statement of, "Yes, you did." Like, there's no argument here. I'm not going to go back and forth. You did laugh. You know you laughed. I know you laughed. Kind of case closed,
and
right? And you were dropping, right? You were doubting. These kinds of things are happening. So that's the whole conversation. And "No, but you did laugh" kind of wraps a bow around that part of the conversation. And when we get to verse 16, it goes in a completely different direction. And so that's where we stopped it right there. And now we'll pick up in verse 16. In this section, we're going to talk about Sodom's destruction, and that destruction is going to be revealed by the Lord to Abraham. The ESV study note says, "Out of concern for Lot, Abraham intercedes with God regarding his nephew and his family." And so you guys know the story, and so we're going to cover the story again and see if there's some new things that we might be able to get out of it. So I'm going to pick up and read in verse 16. I'm reading out of the ESV. 16 says, "Then the men set out from there, and they looked down towards Sodom. And Abraham went with them to see them, to set them on their way." Verse 17, "The Lord said, 'Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him, for I have chosen him that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised him.' Then the Lord said, 'Because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me. And if not, I will know.'" So
there's three men.
So it says in verse 16, "Then the men set out," right? So there's three of them. He's probably having a conversation with them. We're presuming that the other two men are angels, right? Then they're the angels that actually end up going down to Sodom and Gomorrah. But verse 16, "Then the men set out from there. They looked down towards Sodom." That's where they're going. Abraham, like a good host, is seeing them to the door, right? They're in a tent, but Abraham's walking them and seeing them on their way. And as they're walking, the Lord says, probably to the other men with him, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do?" And then he says, "Seeing that I've given Abraham this promise, he's going to be a great nation, all these things are happening, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised him," and all of these different things. My first question is, why do you think the Lord decides to tell Abraham in the first place? He's walking out, and it's kind of interesting because it's the Lord here walking with these men, and he says, it's almost like he's contemplating, should I tell him? Should I not tell him?
But, Has he told him yet?
He's about to tell him. He's kind of telling him here at the end of that little section that I read. But it's kind of like, I don't really think it's a question when he says, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? In fact, if you look at the translation, there's not a question mark at the end of that. And different translations probably state that word a little bit differently. Does yours have a question mark?
Yes, sir.
In different translations, in my ESV, there's not. It can be taken more as a statement. Like, in other words, I'm not going to hide this from Abraham. He's not asking the question, will I hide this from him or should I? He's saying, essentially, he's saying, I'm not going to hide that. Shall I? No. It's an it's a question with an implied answer. Do you see that? And so God chooses, again, the ESV study note, God chooses to disclose to Abraham what he's about to do on the grounds that Abraham has a unique role to fulfill regarding his own descendants and all the nations of the earth. And so a couple of things about Sodom and Gomorrah. What do we know about Sodom and Gomorrah? Anything that you guys know or remember?
Good place to be, man.
At this point?
Yeah, at this point. Yeah.
Sin City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we know that at this point?
Do we know that it's Sin City at this point? No.
I don't.
Sodom and Gomorrah. Right. Right. Okay. Yeah.
We don't know anything at this point.
Yeah. We do actually. Ivan, what were you saying? Tell us the story to remind us. There were other kings.
Came against three.
That's right. Yeah.
Against the king of Sodom.
Took
his people, including Lot. Yeah. Right? And Abraham had to go rescue them, right? Mm-hmm. When Abraham came back from rescuing the people, remember, who was he greeted with first? He was greeted by the king of Melchizedek, but he was also greeted by the king of Sodom. And the king of Sodom said, hey, let me give you all this stuff. Right? Abraham's response was, I'm not going to take anything from you, otherwise you'll say that my riches came from you. Right? To me, there's already a hint in that conversation with Abraham and the king of Sodom that there's issues in Sodom and that there are issues with what's going on there. Not only did they get overwhelmed, you know, yes, not good at war, right? But he was unwilling to take anything from the king of Sodom. And there's an assumption there that the king of Sodom would maybe boast that, hey, I made Abraham who he is today, right? Do we know anything else?
Well, but then verse 20 is...
Verse 20?
Yeah. We find out a lot more.
He's trying to speed us up to there. Okay. Sodom and Gomorrah are cities on the kind of the south east side of the Dead Sea, away from the area, a little bit away from the area where Abraham is. But remember, when Abraham and Lot's folks were disputing over the good land, they split, and the land and the area that Lot chose was to go into the area of Sodom. So his family, and also remember this, that Lot is essentially, while he's Abraham's nephew, he's almost like a son, because he's had Lot with him for quite a while. So just to go from there. When we get to verse 20, the Lord says the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is immense, and their sin is extremely serious. I'll go down to see what they've done, if what they've done justifies the cry that's come up to me. If not, I'll find out. There's a couple of times in the New Testament where God says, I'm coming down to see what's going on. Do you guys remember the first time we saw God comes down to see what's happening here? Babylon. Or the Tower of Babel, sorry. The Tower of Babel. He says, I'm coming down to see what they've done, what they've built, right? At the time when we said that he was coming to the Tower of Babel, we said that God was coming down to audit them, right? And we actually talked about auditors and kind of what that's like and what happens when an auditor comes? Do you want to hide things, or are you ready to just show them this is what we've done, right? Because you have nothing to hide. And so God comes down to audit the lives of the people at the Tower of Babel, and now he's doing the same thing here at Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, it's not because we think God doesn't know, right? It's because his physical presence is an indicator that he is watching, right? It's easy for us, or maybe it's not easy for us, to think about God in the sense that we already talked about how Sarah couldn't hide things from God, right? And how we can't hide things from God. But if he's physically present there, I think that the stakes get raised. I think that things are more intense. Things are more kind of out in the open, if you will. Any other thoughts? I will go down to see.
You mean on this verse?
Mm-hmm. On verse 20 and 21, yeah. Where he says, I will go down to see what's happening there.
Well, I'm going back to verse 20.
Okay, go back to 20.
The outcry is so great, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's... I guess I hadn't thought about it in a while. I've read this in a while, but... God hears our pleas.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
You know? God hears people
Somebody
who pray.
Somebody is crying out.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
What a great reminder that no matter how bad things are, which apparently Sodom and Gomorrah were pretty bad, there were still people there who were saying...
Help.
God.
This has to stop. This is bad.
Exactly.
That's good.
And
that's
God,
good.
And God was like... I've heard your pleas. I'm gonna come down and,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah. And I was gonna talk, and that's a good great point, because I was gonna talk about intercessory prayer here in a little bit, and the fact that he intercedes on behalf of the people when Abraham begins to plea on behalf of Lot and the people.
I mean, we know God already knows the whole situation,
correct?
Right? But he makes a point to say, I'm coming down to see because I've heard what you've had to say.
Yeah.
And you're right. The physical presence
raises the stakes, right?
Stakes, but I guess
it's a message. It's
a message, right?
Well, you talk about
it's not
here's
just, I've heard what you're doing. I know what you're doing. I'm here because of what you're doing.
Down in the commentary, I like how it also says God is fully imminent. He has a personal interest. He's personally involved with his creation.
Yeah. And the word in the ESV study note says there's scrutiny. He's going to go down and he's going to scrutinize. He's going to view it. But it's personal, right? The outcry that you just pointed out was personal to him, to the point that I'm going to go personally and check that out. You think about that in our own lives. I manage a lot of people, right? When there's a specific issue that's kind of big enough. Let's say I get a call from a principal that says, hey, there's a huge issue. I get in my car and I go over. In fact, it happened a couple of weeks ago. And sometimes the principals are like, oh, you didn't have to come. And I'm like, yeah, I did. This is important.
You called.
Right? I did. This is important. Oh, I didn't expect you to come. Well, yeah, of course I'm going to come here. But do you see the difference? I mean, it's important. And he hears the outcry, and what you said is great to point that out. The people are crying out. In fact, the Holman Christian Study note says the Lord would investigate Sodom and Gomorrah for two reasons. The outcry coming from their victims was immense, and the city's sin, the second part, was extremely serious. The city's sin was serious, and the outcry was immense. And so for those two reasons, personally gets involved, right? That's awesome. He does hear us. And the second part of that, we can't lose sight of, the sin was serious enough, but he's going to go deal with it on his own. That's the other part of that.
Yeah, that's all right. You think it's really the emphasis. I mean, God's all-knowing, infinite
Correct.
Wisdom. So it's for, you know, is it, you know, for the towns two over that, wow, look at this.
Right.
God went there, and yeah, we know the outcome.
And the fact that he has to go and see doesn't indicate that he has limited knowledge of the situation. Mm-hmm. What it indicates is that he has a personal need or personal desire to get personally involved. Yeah.
Like he's showing up,
the bad news...
It's worthy of his...
Right.
The bad news of Sodom and Gomorrah is this is the
more familiar version of wait till your father gets home, right?
Here comes daddy.
It's like, you're screwing up so bad, so we're just going to wait till your dad gets home because we're in this.
Our commentary draws an echo to the Tower of Babylon being built.
Uh-huh.
So God says, let me come down and see what you've done.
Yep.
This is interesting.
He comes down to see the Tower of Babel, and at that time they were saying, "We're going to be like God. We're going to build this thing. We're going to be masters of our own destiny." And here he comes down again to audit, to see what's going on, to find out. And you're going to find, and we're going to see here as Abraham has this conversation with him. He's looking for the good people. He's not just coming to destroy the wicked, but he's also coming to protect the good. Look at in Ezekiel chapter. Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 49 to 50. Mm-hmm.
It was just in Ezekiel 15 years ago.
Lucky Brad. Ezekiel what?
16?
Chapter 16, verse 49 to 50. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was just...
This is actually really... this is in the middle, just context from Ezekiel, this is in the middle of the prophet basically chastising Israel and saying that you guys are doing some bad things. You're faithless, right? And I was going to start in verse 49 because that's where it talks about the sin of Sodom. But in verse, just to give you the context, in verse 48, Ezekiel says, "As I live, declares the Lord, your sister Sodom and her daughters have not done as you and your daughters have done." So lest we think that Sodom was the worst it's ever been, even in the Old Testament, things get worse than Sodom.
Wow.
Right? And so Ezekiel's telling Israel then, he's saying, as God declares, Sodom wasn't as bad as you are. But then now, look in verse 49, it talks about the sin. Usually when we think of Sodom and Gomorrah, we think about one sin, right?
No. Yes. I wasn't being funny.
We think about one sin, but there's actually multiple. Mm-hmm. Look at verse 49 in Ezekiel 16, 49. "Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride." So number one, Sodom. And when it says her sisters, that's her sister cities, if you will.
The suburbs.
They had pride. Look at the next one in the ESV. Excess of food. Gluttony.
Mm-hmm.
Prosperous ease. So they had some wealth. And what did that wealth give them? Complacency, ease. But did not aid the poor and the needy. So they neglected the poor. They neglected the needy. They were haughty and did an abomination before me. They were haughty. What does that word mean?
Haughty? Arrogant?
Yeah, they were arrogant. They were prideful. And they were haughty and did an abomination before me. So I removed them when I saw it. And notice at the end of that, so I removed them when I saw it. They were wiped out. What was the?
No, it's just God's calling you this. God saved this to you. It's not, hey, dude,
don't like those shoes.
No, this is God going, okay.
You're detestable.
You're deplorable. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The
redeemable.
Okay. The
and he wipes you out.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Part of what he's blaming them for is social injustice.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't take care of the poor.
Right.
They didn't take care of the needy. They had too much pride, too much excess, wealth that they wouldn't share.
He called them out for social injustice.
He did.
I think we got that backwards.
Let me ask you a question.
You did?
I don't think God... created social. I think he said, "You take care of these people."
Correct.
Right. And we've
called it that.
We've coded it.
That's what we call
social
it.
Exactly.
That's what we call. Mark, what do you think? What is he call it? Just love.
Yeah. So exactly.
Getting back to the context in Ezekiel, who is he talking to?
He's talking to Israel.
Israel. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's saying,
You guys are worse. That's what he's saying. Okay, you guys are worse than Sodom, is what he's saying. Yeah. And then he goes on to list what they did, and he's saying you guys are worse. So, pretty bad.
Wow. Wait, those are some. That's a great verse. You know, you start getting into application, so you kind of think of, you know, or just I'll just take it to myself only. You know, okay, I don't do the bad things in Sodom and Gomorrah, but then you start thinking, overfed, unconcerned, arrogant, don't help the needy enough. You know, these are things that, you know, convict me, and, you know, so you kind of just think through. You know, so it's...
He's specifically speaking, Ezekiel's specifically speaking to Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And when he's talking about the city, Sodom, he's comparing the city of Jerusalem at that time with the city of Sodom.
Yeah,
so scholars have said that Sodom was still burning.
It's in the New Testament.
It's like Kuwait.
The fires.
The fires were going on. Mm-hmm. That they could actually still see Sodom burning. Mm-hmm. Wow.
The eternal flame of Jacob.
So,
The eternal flame of Jacob.
That's
Shut up, man.
Okay.
It's going to be terrible. I'm just saying.
So the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah included self-centered pride, neglect of the poor and needy, and then doing unnamed detestable things. He doesn't necessarily say what those detestable things are. We're going to see a little bit later what some of the detestable things are. But that's what's happening here. So the Lord tells Abraham, back to Genesis chapter 18, that this is what he's going to do. In verse 20, we heard the outcry, and that was a good point, the outcry coming from the city. And now he says, I'm going to go down and see. I'm going to audit what's going on. I'm going to go down personally to see if they've done all together according to the outcry that has come to me. And if they haven't, I will know. That's interesting. Like, I will know the truth. So look at verse 22. So the men turned from there and went toward Sodom. But Abraham still stood before the Lord. Then Abraham drew near and said, will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then sweep away the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to put the righteous to death with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be that from you. Might have an exclamation point there. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just? And the Lord said, if I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Where before verse 22, right? Mm-hmm. Where does it say that he's going to wipe out Sodom?
It doesn't.
He doesn't, right?
He does. It doesn't say anything.
To see what's
Abraham
going on.
Jumps to the, or somehow assumes or knows what's getting ready.
So he can. Maybe it happened, and maybe he said more that's just not written here, and we just didn't know. And he said, "I'm going to wipe this out." Or maybe Abraham saw the look in his eye.
Yeah.
Right.
Abraham knows Sodom.
It's a Samuel L. Jackson look.
Right. Or Abraham knows Sodom.
He also knows the Lord,
right?
Well, the Lord, also, the Lord says, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm fixing to do?
Yeah.
I mean, if the God says, I'm fixing to do something, I'd be like,
you might want to look away.
Which way is that going to fly?
You know, he hadn't said what he was going to do.
Right.
So he'd have to be a historian, and he said, hey, man, last time God did this, you know, Babel didn't end up
too good. Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's probably, we don't know, right? Did he say it and it just didn't get written here?
The flood was a good number.
Did he say it and it just didn't get written here? Or was it just the implied, know?
I'm just going to go see what's going on in Sodom. And I think, like you said earlier, Abraham already knew there's some issues in Sodom.
Yeah, that's what.
Yeah.
He knows what's wrong with Sodom, right? He knows there's issues there. And he's like, oh, there's a noise upstairs, and mom and dad are coming upstairs. The kids know something bad's about to happen, right? Because something bad happened, right? I mean, so that's kind of... Yeah, exactly, right? So I think Abraham knows... Abraham knows what's going to happen. Here's another thing. Look at verse 22. It says, the men turned from there and went toward Sodom while Abraham remained standing before the Lord. There's three people. two of them leave. It appears that two of them, they just start walking off. But Abraham, verse 22.
Okay.
So the men turned from there and went toward Sodom. It sounds like they're leaving, right? But Abraham stood before the Lord.
Okay.
He's not allowing the Lord to leave. He's standing there like, no, we need to talk.
Yeah.
Right? Pretty, and I believe it is. I think it's pretty bold, right? In the words that he's using, and I think it's the book of Hebrews says that because of Jesus Christ and His blood shed for us, we can now come boldly before the throne of the Lord, boldly before the throne of grace, and we do that through the blood of Christ. We do that because now we don't need a high priest to intercede for us on our behalf. In the Old Testament. And this is before the office of the priesthood. We have Melchizedek, but we don't have the Levitical priesthood yet, right? Abraham is directly interceding with God. He's going directly to the source and saying, wait a minute, let's talk about this, right? Then we have the priesthood, and the priesthood becomes the intercessor. In the New Testament, through Jesus Christ, we have full access. So we have the same access that Abraham has. Do you follow that? We can come boldly to the throne of grace, and we can make our petitions known. That's what Abraham's doing here. The men turned, and they're walking away. And so while the angels walked away, Abraham remained in place to challenge the Lord's decision. The Home and Christian Study Bible says, this passage is one of the three greatest illustrations of petitionary prayer in the Old Testament. The other two are in Ezekiel and Amos. Abraham got the Lord to agree to spare Sodom, and we'll see here, to spare Sodom if six successive smaller totals of righteous people could be found in the city. Clearly evident in this section are Abraham's respect for God. He's standing before the Lord. His confidence in God's power and justice, and his compassionate concern for Lot and the other inhabitants of Sodom. At the same time, the Lord's mercy is seen in his willingness to see the entire city, to spare the entire city on account of, and we haven't gotten there, just 10 righteous people is where we're going to end up. But so Abraham stands before him. Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? He's appealing to God's justice. Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. I do think that our comment about how Abraham knows Sodom, he throws out a number 50 right here at the very beginning, probably mostly concerned about Lot, but he says, hey, 50 righteous people are in it. Far be it from you to do such a thing, to put righteous to death with the wicked so that the righteous spares the wicked. Far be it from you. Do you think he's being
facetious?
No, when he's in my translation has far be it from you in a exclamation point in verse 25. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just? Do you think he's almost angry with God? Like, you can't do this? Or what's going on there with the exclamation point and him basically screaming out, how can you do this?
He's negotiating.
He's negotiating, but in his mind, I think he's also displaying the heart of God.
When you're talking about negotiating the righteous from the...
Yeah. I think he's talking about, God, you're a fair God, and you know, if there's some good people, are you going to cause bad things to happen for those good people? So I think the explanation is that there may be some good people down there, you know.
Well, yeah. let's go basic. It's no different than back when you played football and one dude makes one mistake, but the whole team has to do push-ups.
Yeah,
or run laps.
I mean, everybody's now ticked at that dude.
Yeah, that didn't feel good.
We were righteous. You were the idiot. I mean, come on. Why do we have to suffer because of your consequence? You know, because of what your actions were.
Yeah.
My immediate thought is, okay, if someone's going to go do something in Panama, I know how many relatives I have to prepare.
You're going to want to stop them at all costs.
So I'm trying to figure out how can I save my people.
Yeah, I think that's...
There's other people. that may benefit, but...
But you're not worried about those people.
I know, geez, if you're going there and you're going to kill this place, but I got 50 people down here.
Right.
Can you help me out here?
Right.
You're appealing to his, what you know is his...
I think the sense of emotion, the sense of emotion that's in his...
In his mercy. It's part of your... And that's your opening offer.
Yeah. Is it his... Is Abraham realizing that there's a angry guy to God?
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, because he says, far be it from you, right?
But it's a righteous anger.
Far be it from you.
Like, you wouldn't do that, would you?
But you're the God I know is a loving God and who is going to help me have a kid and... All this, are you really? I mean, where's this coming from, right? Is he kind of asking?
But you know, he could do.
How mad are you, God?
When he sent the plagues over to save Abraham?
Just to save him. Yeah. When Sarah was with the king, right? Yeah.
He knows he can have
that's
that
right. Too. That's right. He does. So. I think the emotion in Abraham's voice is definitely the emotion that you're about to go kill everyone there, including my family. You can't do that. I mean, I think all of us would be standing there screaming out loud if our loved ones were in danger, right? Especially if we thought our loved ones were innocent.
But there's also, I was going to say, there's an assumption on Abraham's part that there are righteous people there, right? That
right. So,
and the bad news at the end of this whole deal is...
Maybe God knows something Abraham didn't.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's
it's a safe bet. There's not 50.
There's some assumptions beneath this, too.
It's not 50-50, right?
Yeah.
Well, I've moved ahead, but, I mean, the thing that...
He's going to keep the bad thing. The number's going to keep coming down.
Is we hear that there are outcries
yeah.
of people in this city saying, God, please fix this. And yet, God still says,
you guys are bad too.
You're part of it.
Yeah.
You're.
Well, I'm not sure that the outcry is from those cities. It could be one city over, you know, just there's some bad stuff happening at those towns.
We're praying for Houston.
Yeah, exactly.
So check this out. Number one, Abraham didn't question that Sodom was overwhelmingly wicked. He didn't question the wickedness of Sodom. He didn't go, they're not. They're good people, right? They're just good people, you know, just doing what they do.
Sodomites will be Sodomites.
Abraham didn't question that Sodom was overwhelmingly wicked. He also didn't question that the wickedness deserved punishment. He didn't say, wait, why would you punish anybody?
He was interceding.
Right. He didn't question that they were wicked. He didn't question that the wickedness deserved punishment. But he was asserting that God does distinguish between the wicked and the righteous. There is a separation, wicked and righteous. In fact, he was asking mercy for the entire city on the basis of a righteous minority. Isn't that interesting? Would you save the city? Would you save the entire city on the basis of a righteous minority? So a few things here. He didn't question the wickedness. He didn't question that wickedness deserves punishment. But what he was asserting was, or what he was asking was, for mercy for the entire city based on a righteous minority.
And what did God say?
Well, let's see. What
does
he say?
Not so much. Not so fast.
No, actually, he says, he says,
there's not 10 good guys now.
25, far be it from you to do such a thing, far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just? Okay. And the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous people in the city, I'll spare the whole place for their sake. And of course, we already know that he knows how many people are there that are righteous, right?
Is this a faith test for Abraham?
I don't know.
Does this show the heart of Abraham?
Well, a part of the story is about Abraham and what in his God's relationship with
him. I mean, you fast forward, it goes down to 10.
Right.
I mean,
who holds? I mean, go ahead.
But time out. Back up on my own Abraham and what he's done prior to this.
Yeah, so, that's where I was going.
He
chased down Lot. He went after Lot. He chased that entire army to get Lot back. It really shows the heart of God, because God says, okay, I'm going to go out and get that one sheep that's lost, you know? And then it shows already, what? No, wrong? Good?
No, I'm reading ahead. I'm listening and reading ahead and checking my head.
I'm just thinking this is the next thing. And he shows about God's willing to hold his anger again for at least 10 in an entire city.
So far we're on 50.
Yeah, well, yeah, he goes down to 10.
He's right, he's going to go down to...
I'm going to do the Mexican. Oh, no, 10 pesos.
Let the negotiation begin.
I go down to the very bottom, sorry.
Why do you think he started at 50?
I think he just threw a number out
nice
there.
Nice little round number.
I just think he threw a number out there.
Birdsmen,
the folk he know.
So he's thinking
it's his opening offer.
It's his opening offer. Who has the power in this negotiation?
God.
Clearly God has the power, right? Clearly. And Abraham recognizes that, right? Abraham's not saying this is what you're going to do, right? He's not operating from a standpoint of power. God obviously has the power, and Abraham recognizes that. His love is for Lot is being evidenced here. Maybe he starts at 50 because that's Lot's group, right? That's Lot's people.
It's a number of people he could possibly serve. Just you know,
Mark
go ahead.
No, I mean,
this is good.
No, I'm just the thing I'm sitting there laughing at is like Abram's calling these 50 people, whoever they are, the herdsmen, whatever, family members, righteous. But I'm sitting here going, but Abram knows who he is and who he was. I mean, he did the thing with Lot. He had sex with his slave. I mean, he sees it, he had all the sin welled up in him. Wasn't that unrighteous?
Abram?
Yeah, I'm talking about what the things that he did. But he's sitting here looking and calling these people unrighteous, and he's going to say, well, God...
See, it's not...
Go ahead.
So for Abraham, it's not the things that he did or didn't do that made him righteous, remember?
Right.
What made him righteous was his faith.
Right. Correct.
And it says that he had faith, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. Now, we know that Abraham had peaks and valleys in terms of his faith.
David.
And he did good things and bad things.
Yeah.
Right? But overall, Abraham could be counted righteous because of his faith. Okay. And we know here, just the mere fact that God's visiting him, that he has a relationship.
It's
personal to the extent that he's sitting here negotiating with God. For the fate of this city.
And God's not getting angry.
Not many people get to negotiate with God, right?
That's pretty cool.
There are a lot of Christians that believe
apparently a lot of people
believe that. The last time you had the chance to go,
I don't think it was.
I don't
think it was a negotiation.
It was a negotiation. That's right.
Well, in Abraham's mind, he was negotiating probably.
He was asking to me.
But still, the relationship is there.
Yeah,
Mark. He was defining the limits.
I'm giving you something. You know, kind of give and take. Abraham had nothing to give.
He was just defining the limits. He was just drawing the rules.
That's a good point.
He was trying to understand the rules of the game, right?
Yeah. But he's trying to.
But
where the line is.
It's just like kids and parents.
Yeah, exactly. I give you that. All right, fine. Right. Just like kids and parents.
More along those lines.
So let me put this out there. He starts at 50. Perhaps he felt that Lot could have had a positive influence on the city's citizens. You know, hey, Lot's righteous. Maybe Lot could have saved. Maybe he could have not saved, but maybe he could have been salt and light.
So why didn't he just say, will you save Lot and my family?
You think that was the ultimate goal? It's just Lot?
I think he goes, hey, these 50 people, but in his head, he's really like, he's got the names of the 50 people, right?
But did he think that God didn't know that he knew that? I mean, how about 50
point?
People?
Yeah.
I think it may be hard for Abraham, because he's there physically, right? So, and he knows that they're going to go look. He said, we're going to go see what's going on.
And he knows what they're going to find.
So, he does know. So let's read on, because he says, if I find Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I'll spare the whole place for their sake. Verse 27, Abraham answered and said, behold, I've undertaken to speak to the Lord. Now, maybe he's realizing, wow, I've just been kind of in your face a little bit here. I who am but dust and ashes. Do you see the humility? Now he's realizing.
I got nothing to offer here.
Now he's probably realizing who he's talking to. And what he's doing, so the humility all of a sudden comes back. verse 28. Suppose 5 of the 50 righteous are lacking. Will you destroy the whole city for the lack of 5? And he said, I'll not destroy it if I find 45 there.
What was only 40?
Again he spoke, and he said to him, suppose 40 are found there. He answered, for the sake of 40, I'll not do it. Verse 30, then he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 are found there. He answered, I'll not do it if I find 30 there. He said, behold, I've undertaken to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there. He answered, for the sake of 20, I'll not destroy it. Then he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak again, but this one more time. Suppose 10 are found there. He answered, for the sake of 10, I'll not destroy it. And the Lord went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place.
So is this Abraham rethinking his initial assessment? Is this him saying, what if there's 50 there? My Lot and his family and his herdsmen, and then he goes, well, Bill and those guys really aren't that righteous after all. How about 40? Oh, yeah. And then
I remember we had that big argument and we had to split up. Some of those herdsmen weren't so.
Right. Is he starting to realize that.
Let's talk about 20.
Is God opening his eyes? And like, I think. No, you're right. I guess, yeah, he's kind of a jerk.
To me, this foreshadows the New Testament, the mustard seed and that kind of thing. I mean, is this really just a case of God saying, I know who individuals are? I mean, it's more of a migration from a one-to-many to a one-to-one kind of a thinking. Is this kind of narrowing that number? Remember, Abraham's got the covenant. Your descendants will be numerous. Right. And now I see this as sort of a way of saying, I think you're a little bit focused on negotiation, but maybe it's more about, you know,
I know everyone's
laying down a line that says, you know, I can, you know, enumerate individual, which we haven't seen really maybe since the Garden of Eden or Noah.
He judges the heart of every man. Right. Is that kind of what you're saying? Like, individually, I know it's in your heart. I know it's in your heart. I know it's in your heart. And so the numbers start to come down because I'm not looking at this as a broad stroke. I'm a broad stroke, a group of people, if you're circumcised or not circumcised, right? Because we just had that. But I'm looking at your heart. I'm looking at who you are as a person, as an individual.
It starts with, the wickedness of Sodom. The outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great, and their sin so grievous. But actually, cities don't sin; people sin.
Yeah, it's the people, but the city is made up of the people, right? So, yeah, he's starting to narrow this down to the individual people.
If the outcry is so great, how come there's not that many
saved?
Righteous people.
Bill made a point, and I don't know the answer, but I didn't think about Bill's point. He said maybe it wasn't the outcry; might not have been coming from the city. Might have been coming from
everybody else
a different city, or everybody else that knows about the city.
Little
visitors to the city, the people who pass by the city.
It's the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah.
Well, it's the outcry against, not necessarily from. Right? Go ahead.
Also, some victimology here. When a child is molested, when a child is sexually abused, we call it an outcry.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be so much
that they're actually speaking.
It could also be the outcry from the victim.
The event.
But if there are victims, would those victims be innocent and saved, I think was part of the question. Or are they part of the being destroyed?
Does it need to be? If I have a 16-year-old who uses drugs and she's molested by a 31-year-old, does she have to be innocent in the process to be victim? Or is it an outcry? And she makes an outcry. Do I take that into consideration? No, I don't. She's a victim of the crime. So, that is... No, what I'm saying is that because she left home and got involved with the wrong guy, and then is addicted to drugs, and then she makes an outcry that she was raped. Does that make the crime less of an outcry? No, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be crime. Righteous. Doesn't have to be righteous. She's a victim.
Yeah,
it's the impact. The impact, and I think what you're saying is the impact of sin itself becomes the outcry.
Yeah. But in that instance, if I come to perform justice, justice isn't going to be performed on the victim as well as
the criminal.
criminal. Yeah.
That's the point.
But I think what Renee's saying, though, is that...
the fact that she's being victimized. I'm trying to rescue the victim and punish the wicked.
Yeah, so when you look at this from God's standpoint...
And sometimes,
what does the New Testament say about righteousness?
No, not one.
No, none are righteous.
Nobody's righteous on their own.
So that's right. The whole point. No one was righteous.
That's the point.
Or
without Christ,
drop the mic.
Or
we're all guilty.
Sometimes our salvation involves our destruction.
Wow. Okay.
Why didn't you just put your pinky up on that little sip of coffee?
Get your monocle out.
I saw how you leaned
back,
over.
Pull it back.
Do you guys think that
Dr. Evil?
Do you think that?
One said that.
$1 million. Salvation involves our destruction.
Why do you think that Abraham's number keeps going down? Does he just start to think more and more about Sodom and what's going on there, and decide, okay, wait a minute.
We don't know.
It talks about his heart.
I don't think so.
It was Lot. It was Lot's wife.
His daughters.
He had two daughters that were unmarried. He had daughters. He had son-in-laws. So that means there were other daughters that were married.
Yep.
Which it's still about at least 8. So
that's why we narrowed it down to 10.
15.
But he is not, there's some kids in there.
But he is not making a petition for these 10. It's for the entire town.
Yeah.
So that's
why save the whole town for the righteous.
If I can just, we can just find 10 good guys down there, will you spare the entire city? That's what he talks about, the entire city.
I think he's just negotiating. I think he starts with 50, and he wants to see because he's probably pretty sure that.
But
the chances of him finding 50.
But God says if there's 50, I'll spare it. There's still no negotiation,
huh?
There's not, but he's not negotiating.
I know because I was going to say because God says there's 50 down that he'll spare it. Yeah,
right. And so he's not negotiating.
He starts negotiating against himself.
Right. No, he's negotiating for himself.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he does get something in exchange. He gets, you know, his family members or whoever saved from the.
But is
wiped
don't
out.
You
but what's in it for God?
But he's doing it.
What's in it for God?
Well, God. Well, see, God.
God knows the answer.
God knows the answer, and God started this out with, "Should I tell Abraham?" Because he wants to know what Abraham's going to do, or he's. I mean, he didn't have to get Abraham's permission.
So let's talk about something else. Let's talk about Abraham's desire to save his family. Is it great? It's a huge desire, right?
Yeah. But again,
so much
well,
so that he's emotional
city.
And
it's the entire city, huh?
It's a city. It is the entire city, right? So
there's an element there of why, you know. So let's say the.
Do you think his love is greater than just his love for Lot? You think his love is for even the unrighteous?
He's empathetic for these, you know.
So his desire is not just for Lot, but to save the whole city. That's a good point. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, do we have that same desire? Let's not talk about to save the whole city, but just our own family, right? To stand before God and say, Lord, save them. Do what it takes to bring them into the family. Do what it takes to reach out, because I know I can't save my brother, for example, right? But he can. And how many times do we intercede for the salvation of other people? And we do lots of prayer requests every morning here, for example, and it's often about someone sick or there's a job situation. And I loved the text we got from Robert, because his text was pray for Zach's salvation. Do you follow? Mm-hmm. And there's intercessory, and there's a desire for someone to be saved, right? So it goes beyond just and here's the other part that we often don't talk about. The opposite of that, it's very striking. What's gonna happen to the city if it's not saved? it's going to be destroyed, right? We kind of sweep that message under the rug these days because we think we're too radical if we talk about stuff like that.
And they don't live for tomorrow to turn to God.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that, though?
Well, so if Abraham is saying, don't kill this entire town, you know, let's say, just for sake of discussion, let's say there's 200 people in the town. So if we find 10 good people, there's 190 bad people. But if they're not completely obliterated, maybe of those 190 lost souls, you know, they can live to find the Lord, and maybe 50 people can become. So instead of 10, it can grow to other people. So, you know, not once a sinner, always a sinner.
And he doesn't say, let me go get 50 people out before you do this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wanted to save them.
Well, these 50 people. God is saying these people can't be saved.
He's not going to save them. Well, that's the other thing, too. That's a good point. That's a good point, because there is a time of judgment coming for everybody. And none of us know when that's going to be. For Sodom and Gomorrah, it was going to be the next day.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now.
You go home where it's safe. That's exactly right.
No, I mean,
he's done. He's done.
The Old Testament, we're not into salvation. Rules and
rules and
complying or not complying.
Yeah,
but we are into judgment.
Second chances in the Old Testament.
We are into judgment.
But there are a lot of. I mean, David. I mean, you look at all. You know, there was so many that sinned and sinned and sinned, and then got right with
God
the Lord.
God still considered them to be righteous.
Well, this whole discussion is about giving a second chance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
God, actually, this will be the third.
And in verse...
The first one was when the kings came and took everybody captive. That was warning number one. Y'all need
even Abraham himself, he sleeps with maidservant, and we use the term slave, even having a slave, a human being as a slave.
Yeah, all of these guys are. A lot of the Old Testament guys are flawed. Mm-hmm. Even the saints.
Those Old Testament guys.
God's love.
Thank goodness.
So let me say this next
thing here. Those unrighteous jerks.
God's love for His saints and for His people. Are seen in this decision in verse 32 when he says, I'll not destroy it on account of 10. As corrupt as the cities were, God was willing to withhold judgment for the sake of a faithful remnant. That should be a reminder that we can make a difference by standing for God. He's willing to save the entire city for the sake of 10 people. And we say as Christians, well, what kind of impact can I have? Just the fact of being and worshiping and following Christ has an impact on your surroundings if you're faithful, right? And so here it is. He says, man, this... And remember, we started off with how bad the outcry was. And we went to Ezekiel and we saw all of... They don't take care of their people. They're rich. They're prideful. They're haughty, right? And in the middle of all of that corruption, right, He's willing to save the city for 10 people. If I can just find a remnant of my people, I'll save all of them from this destruction. And I think someone said to give them all time to come to the Lord. He's not willing for any to perish, but that all would come to a saving faith. Do you see that? And so if there's just 10 people, I'll save the city. That's God's heart there, right? God's heart there is right there in the middle of this. But at the same time, Abraham pleads, would a righteous judge do this? Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just? And what do you think God's answer is? Absolutely, that's what I'm doing.
Is this also prophecy? I mean, is this also God saying there will be a time when
Of course,
there'll be nobody left?
This is early on in the Old Testament, right. And so this is almost like a precedent setting. This is almost like an example. Yeah. And we mentioned before in the New Testament, they talk about the fires from Sodom and Gomorrah still burning.
Right.
So
this is God demonstrating how things work.
Correct.
It is His creation.
They're like a case study for everything that comes out.
Yep.
Right. And what you find out is He's willing to save for righteous. He's not willing to punish the righteous and the wicked. Remember, Abraham says, "Well, you going to punish them all?" No, I'm going to save some if they're willing to, if they're able to be saved. And he does go in, and he doesn't save the whole city, right? But he does save the people who are righteous in the city. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. So he's not destroying them all. He's just going to destroy those. He's willing to save it for just a remnant. So you see his just judgment. When Abraham says, "Shall the judge of all the earth do what is just?"
But Mark, reading ahead a little bit, and who he saves in the end, which is Lot, wife, and two daughters, would you presume that the rest of the city
all dead?
Yeah, so they're all not, or even those that he saved, just because they were Abraham's kin.
I think there's a question there too. Lot himself doesn't seem very righteous in this whole story when we get to chapter 19.
So that part of it is harder to...
So I don't want to jump into 19 because there's a lot more going on in chapter 19 that we need to cover.
Thanks for ruining it for us.
Does it keep you hooked?
No, yeah.
Cliffhanger. I'm just curious after the break.
I'm just curious to what happens.
God's going to be true to his nature. He's going to save the righteous. He's going to do what we all know.
He's going to judge everybody,
but he's going to destroy ultimately the wicked.
So Abraham could have gone all the way down to
So what?
Could have kept, Abraham could have kept taking that number down to one.
Yeah.
But he felt good, solid, comfortable at 10. He's like, all right, I think I'm good.
If he went down to one, wouldn't that be prideful?
I'm going
to
hold.
He could have, except for God walked away.
What?
I'm done.
Abraham said,
we're done here.
Try this one last time. And that's when God said, okay, well, you said one last time.
So he could have said one instead of 10.
He could have said one.
But again, Abraham was good. I'm good, solid at 10.
I got
10. I'm going to hold.
I know I got 10.
Right. I'm going to hold on 10.
Oh my gosh, y'all.
I'm going to hold on 10.
That's what he says, yeah.
Someone close this and we can still chat.